Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 13th of January. Interesting hour. We're going to be spending the last half hour of this hour talking about the federal trial over the constitutionality of California's ban on same-sex marriage, which opened on Monday and has been receiving a great deal of publicity, rightfully so, because it could be a groundbreaking case. Everybody believes here that it's going to eventually reach the United States Supreme Court as a landmark case. Coming up later this hour, we'll be speaking with Professor Jesse Choper from the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. This first half hour of the show, John Marcotte is joining us. John is a writer who runs the site badmouth.net, and he's collecting signatures to get the California Protection of Marriage Act on the ballot. If passed, divorce would be illegal in the state of California. The initiative was to really mock the proponents of Proposition 8, and he has said on CNN that this act is the logical extension of Proposition 8. John is joining us the first half hour. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I would expect we might have more than a few. 800-486-8655 is our number. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hi, John. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning. Well, afternoon for you?
No, morning.
Morning still. Good morning.
Good morning, John. So how did you get rolling on this idea? I think it's an incredibly intriguing idea, but what made you decide to do this?
Well, you know, it really is. It was inspired by Proposition 8. I am ashamed to admit that I voted against Proposition 8. I had framed the issue in my mind as a civil rights issue for gay people. Should gay people have the right to get married? I said, it doesn't hurt me. Yes, they should get married. But then, a little bit after the vote, I went and looked at the Yes on 8 website, the people who were for Prop 8, to try to understand their motivations. And it turns out that they barely mention gay people on their website. The words gay, homosexual, or lesbian don't even appear on the front page. What they were trying to do was protect traditional marriage and protect the children. And I thought these were great and noble goals, but they went about it the wrong way. If you want to protect marriage, don't stop gay people from getting married. Stop straight people from getting divorced. So I spent $200 out of pocket and filed my own initiative to ban divorce in the state of California.
So you're traveling around trying to get signatures. How are people responding to you? Are they saying, yes, this is a terrifically great idea?
You know, most of my traveling around has been virtual. You know, people have said that the California ballot initiative process is broken. I actually had someone call me the poster child for abuse of the ballot initiative process. But I don't really see it that way. Most of the ballot initiatives that actually make it on the ballot get there because some large corporation or private entity thinks millions of dollars to pay people to stand in front of Walmart with a clipboard collecting signatures. We're a true grassroots campaign. We don't have a big moneyed interest behind us. We're doing this as a product of the people, and we've gathered a tremendous amount of online support. We have 25,000 Facebook followers that we built up in just a few months.
Oh, my gosh.
And we have a network of volunteers and people who are interested in this issue that really are supporting us tremendously. And we've sent out the paperwork electronically to people after giving them some online training. And we're a true grassroots network and effort. And I think that kind of purity is something you don't see in the ballot process. I'm more worried about the money that gets poured in by, you know, say, PG&E to make it harder for municipal utilities to get started than I am for what I'm doing, which is, I believe, a true ballot initiative of the people.
Well, I would love for some of those 25,000 people to stand in the parking lot at Walmart and get response from people who are asked, would you sign this petition? Aren't you just really interested to find out what their thoughts are?
I am, and I have done that work myself. I walked around the streets of Sacramento and collected signatures, and I understand why they pay people to do it now. That's a thankless job, but yeah, we've gotten some very interesting responses. we get support from both the left and the right. We get people on the right who have very conservative Christian values, who think it's too easy to get divorced, and that institution needs to, at the very least, be weakened, or, you know, some of them think it should be banned, and they sign up. And then we get a lot of support, surprisingly, from liberals in the gay and lesbian community. I assume that after Prop 8, they studied the issue, and they realized how important defending traditional marriage was.
Right.
And then on the flip side, I get attacked from the right by people who think I'm making fun of Prop 8. And then I get attacked on the left by people who feel that I've been called the Christian Taliban. I'm trying to keep my religion out of their state. I don't know where they get those ideas from, but I think since I'm getting support from the left and support from the right, and I'm getting criticism from the left and criticism from the right, that's a good sign that I'm right in the middle. I have my pulse on mainstream America. I think this thing's going to win in a landslide.
Yeah, maybe you do have your pulse on mainstream America. Talk about the amount of money that you see having gone into Proposition 8. Were there lots of forces? Because we'll talk about what's going on in federal court in San Francisco, or it's in San Francisco, isn't it? The federal court that will certainly make national news once it goes to the Supreme Court. Was there a lot of money poured into that ballot initiative,
John? Oh, there was an extraordinary amount of money poured into that ballot initiative. The two largest contributors were the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand that, because if there is one religion in the United States that has the most experience in issues of traditional marriage, it would be the Latter-day Saints.
There you go.
And also the Catholic Church poured a lot of money into the campaign. And then there is a nationwide organization called NAM, the National Organization of Marriage, and they as well poured a lot of money into the campaign. So NAM has actually moved on, and all three of those entities, I should say, moved on up to Maine and helped people in Maine answer question one the correct way, which overturned their gay marriage statute. So they've been traveling from state to state as kind of extra state entities, pouring millions and millions of dollars into each state to make sure that gay marriage does not stand.
Well, surely they must be in favor of your efforts then that would strengthen traditional marriage, right? The Church of Latter-day Saints, the Catholic Church, all those organizations. Am I right?
No, you know, surprisingly not. Although I did do an interview early on with Catholic Radio, and the host was saying, well, this is impractical, everything else, and then I'm Catholic myself. And I pointed out that the Catholic Church does not have the institution of marriage. You cannot get divorced in the Catholic Church.
That's right.
And if we're going to, because it's immoral, if we're going to start enforcing God's laws as the laws of man, we can't pick and choose here. You know that Jesus, in three of the four Gospels, says, "What man has put together, or what God has put together, let no man tear asunder." And in Micah 2:16, he says, "I hate divorce, says the Lord God of Israel. So obviously, God has a problem with divorce. But if you look at the Gospels, Jesus never even mentioned homosexuality or homosexuals once. So, taking Jesus at his word, divorce must be a bigger sin than homosexuality. So I think I'm really, got something here. If you're going to use a religious basis for law, I think I have a much stronger case than Prop 8 did.
Let's go to phone calls and see what our listeners think about this. John Marcotte is our guest. He's a writer. He runs the site badmouth.net, and he's collecting signatures to get the California Protection of Marriage Act on the ballot. If passed, divorce would be illegal in California. Our number, 800-486-8655. Kurt from Kenosha is our first caller, John. Hi, Kurt.
Oh, hello. Well, John, I just want to encourage you in your effort there, because I do believe you have a sincere effort there, and actually I do believe you can accomplish a good bit of good there. As a person who believes in personal freedom, I, of course, think people should have the right to divorce and such, but I think that there's just so much absurdity in American politics now. Virtually every issue that's debated nationally is debated on some absurd emotional level, like defending marriage as opposed to personal rights, which, you know, gay marriage is really an issue of personal rights. But everything in America is dragged into some absurd emotional argument. We never seem to debate the substance of any arguments, and perhaps the only way to defeat that effort is to hoist absurdity on its own petard. And Godspeed to you, sir. I hope you get your petition on the ballot.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. We're trying hard. And, you know, when people say that what I'm doing is absurd, you know, of course it hurts my feelings. If you're saying that what I'm doing is absurd, then you have to look at Proposition 8 and say that was absurd as well, because I almost Xeroxed their front page in terms of the arguments that I'm making. They're identical in both cases. I'm trying to protect marriage, protect children. There are no studies that suggest that children of gay parents suffer any particular disadvantages in life, but there are plenty of studies that say children of divorced parents face economic hardship and face educational difficulties. So, you know, again, I think I'm achieving those goals. And if you're saying that I'm doing something absurd, then you have really no choice but to look at what they did with Proposition 8 and say, that was absurd too. And I think that's kind of a slap in the face of the California voter.
Well, sir, I hate to hurt anyone's feelings, and that wasn't my intent. All I can say is there you go again, trying to debate an issue on rational, fact-based arguments, and that's just not going to get you anywhere in America, it seems. So I hope your proposition does get on the ballot and give America a choice. Thank you.
I really appreciate your support, and I think at some level that we're on the same wavelength on this.
I think you are, too. Is there any chance that this will be a ballot that people will vote on? Is that a possibility, John?
Well, we need a million signatures from our all-volunteer network of people who are gainfully employed and have other things to do. when I started this, I would have said definitely no. I thought my principles were in the right place, but it's an impossible task. But since then, you know, we've had this tremendous amount of media exposure. We've had this huge amount of support, you know, online. Facebook's the very measurable portion of that, but we're getting millions of hits on our site that are not Facebook-related. And, you know, I think we might have a shot at it at this point. You know, when I started out, it was an easy no. But now, you know, we're going to give it a good run for the money. Even if we don't get on the ballot, every time we ask someone to sign this petition and explain what we're doing, they have to think about the rationale why they voted for Proposition 8. And I think that that dialogue is valuable whether we get on the ballot or not.
Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest this half hour, John Marcotte. He's a California man, a writer who runs the site badmouth.net, collecting signatures to get the California Protection of Marriage Act on the ballot. If passed, divorce would be illegal in the state of California. What do you think? We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. John, you mentioned a website. Is it the badmouth.net website with more information on this or another one?
Find a way to insert that. The website is actually rescuemarriage.org.
Rescue Marriage.
Yeah, rescuemarriage.org. And I do own badmouth.net, and I write there on occasion to, you know, keep myself fresh, but it doesn't have much to do with protecting traditional marriage. We compartmentalized that over at rescuemarriage.org because we wanted people to take us seriously.
We go next to Dean from Appleton. Hi, Dean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
There's a real problem here with separation of church and state. I think all these states need to come up with these more of the civil union idea and keep marriage within the confines of the church. How is this gentleman, first off, the first point, there's two. First point is, if you take this initiative of his, then what do you do because you've separated, you haven't bringing out the whole context of the biblical statements about the adulterous acts and the stoning and taking of life in those contexts. And the second point is that, you know, what about other religions? What about other peoples that don't buy into this concept of the Christian ideals? Thank you.
Well, he brings up some very interesting points, and I think that we have set a precedent here in California, though. Proposition 8, if not overtly, certainly there was an undertone of, we're passing this because this is what God wants us to do. And there are many, even Christian denominations, that believe that homosexual unions are fine, but those were kind of overwritten. So I think what we're saying in California is that there is one specific religious point of view that has supremacy. The idea of tyranny of the majority has fallen by the wayside. You know, you can amend the California state constitution with a popular vote of 50% plus one. It's an extraordinary low threshold for that kind of thing, but it really empowers people to do things just like this. So, you know, I can't say too much more about that. I guess I would say that just like Proposition 8, there is a religious argument to be made, but you could also make a secular argument and keep religion out of it, that you're just protecting marriage and protecting children, and that's a neutral moral value in and of itself. There was a second part of the question, and I forget what it was.
Oops, what was the second? Well, I don't remember what it is either, but it'll come to mind.
Let's pretend that I answered it.
Let's do that. What are your thoughts about where this Proposition 8 federal trial is going? I know you've been probably following it fairly closely. Do you see it going to the Supreme Court? Is it riveting?
There's no doubt that it will go to the Supreme Court. No matter who wins, it will get appealed. And no matter who wins on appealed, it will get appealed again. So it's just a matter of time. I'm almost surprised they didn't just fast-track it and get it to the Supreme Court right away because, you know, maybe the Supreme Court wants to hear the lower court's arguments, but it's just definitely headed straight to the Supreme Court. It might take a while to get there, but that's where it's going.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. And, you know, it's very early on in the trial. I mean, what we've had so far are gay and lesbian couples getting up and explaining how, you know, the term marriage is important to them and how being denied the same rights as straight couples in California has been emotionally damaging to them, and they weren't crossed very much by the pro-Prop 8 people. So right now, all we're hearing is a statement of why Prop 8 is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think would, obviously you're doing this to make a point, what would happen in California if you got this on the ballot and people said, right, this really harms traditional marriage, we can't have divorce?
That's an interesting question. You know, I think, number one, it would be the will of the people made law, which is what our ballot initiative process is for, I guess. Mm. And so there would have to be some value put on it like that. But, you know, I think we would have a lot of, you know, the sinners and fornicators moving over the state line to Nevada. I expect Hollywood, we'd lose them. But, you know, I think the other thing is that a lot of these people who all of a sudden say, hey, my rights are being taken away, they might have to look very hard at our ballot initiative process to see if this thing's broken. You know, I don't think the voters of California are hypocritical, though. We asked gay people to give up some of their rights in order to protect traditional marriage. It would be very hypocritical of us to not give up more rights ourselves to make sure that marriage is protected even more. And I believe that, you know, we were honest, and we're not going to be hypocritical on this issue. Let's give up some of our rights to make sure that marriage is protected. We can't expect the gay people to shoulder the entire burden.
Yeah, I see your point. How many people are divorced in California? You're talking about it, probably a fairly big part of the population, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, due to budget cuts, we stopped counting how many divorced. Many states report divorce statistics. California, but we'll just, you know, there's a ballpark figure that always gets thrown around that there's a 50% divorce rate nationwide. So let's take some sort of marker and assume that California might be slightly higher. You know, that 50% divorce rate existed before gay people got married at all. So I really do think that we have to look at ourselves and look at our own house before we worry about what gay people are doing. We're the ones who damaged the institution of marriage. Gay people didn't have a lot to do with it, and so it's up to us to repair it, and I think that I'm doing it in the most straightforward and light, most straightforward way.
It is. Do you not, though, feel that you run a risk of this whole thing getting repealed because you're going to find that people are in abusive relationships, people are dealing with cheaters for husbands or wives, people are dealing with situations they just don't want to be in, and then they'd be stuck, huh?
Yeah, I guess that would be the case. But, you know, when you look at someone who's, let's say, physically abusing their spouse, that, of course, is awful, but we already have laws against that. If you physically assault someone, you're going to go to jail. And, you know, if you are in a relationship that you don't like, we're not saying that you have to live together. You could move into another city. You could separate your finances. You would have almost everything that divorced couples have, except you wouldn't have the title of divorce. And is that title so important? I think there's a parallel to be drawn between civil unions and marriages, which is what we have here in California. Gay people, for some reason, are all up in arms. They want the same title as everybody else. They want to be called married. I think that divorced people, there's a similar thing. You would have all the rights of divorced people. You just wouldn't be able to say that you're divorced.
Yeah, I see your point. This ballot initiative thing, or do you have any fears that before you can get this rolling, Californians may realize, as you seem to indicate, that this wasn't a very good idea to have such an initiative?
I think that, again, we're going to trust in the sincerity of the California voter. Prop 8 was passed by a 2% margin, or 4%, depending on your way of looking at it. 52% of the people voted for Prop 8. And it was largely financed by people collecting signatures in front of Walmart. And if you can't trust our democratic process to the fine shoppers at Walmart, I don't know who you can trust it to. So I think the Californians have decided that they like this ballot initiative process, and I'm not sure what it would take for it to show them that this might be a bad idea. So I don't expect that I will make any inroads in that direction at all.
Yeah. One more call for you. We go to Chris from Columbus. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just want to say excellent use of satire. And as a pretty strong Christian, I don't believe that we should legally remove the divorce option because it would endanger families, because we certainly don't want people to feel they have no other choice other than to kill their spouse.
Mm. Well, that was one of the legal ways you could get divorced in the Old Testament. An earlier caller brought that up, that, you know, you could, if you committed adultery, the man had to pay, I think it was something like 30 shekels in silver, and the woman was stoned to death. So there was a way out for both of them. And, there are all sorts of biblical edicts that I think would be a great idea to start passing into law. For instance, right next to where it says being homosexual is an abomination, about three verses later, it says that eating shellfish is an abomination. So I plan after this to start picketing red lobsters and getting those out of state.
And the list goes on. John, thank you so much for being with us.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks, John. John Marcotte, our guest this first half hour, if you want more information about what he's doing, he's trying to get divorce to be illegal in the state of California. He's making this point, saying that it's the logical extension of Proposition 8. And his website, if you'd like more information, is rescuemarriage.org. Rescuemarriage.org. John Marcotte, our guest the first half hour. As you know, California has been the center of international attention, a federal trial over the constitutionality of California's ban on same-sex marriage opened on Monday of this week, with lawyers, witnesses debating the meaning of marriage and sexual orientation, and gay and lesbian couples testifying about what their thoughts are about not being able to get married. What's going on here is a lawsuit charging that Proposition 8's reinstatement of a state ban on same-sex marriage violates the U.S. Constitution's guarantees of equal protection and due process. The constitutionality of the ban is expected to eventually reach the U.S. Supreme Court as a landmark case. Interesting here, there are two, I guess you could call them legal giants, the former Solicitor General Theodore Olson and attorney David Boies, who are on opposing sides in the higher court case that gave George W. Bush the presidency, have joined forces in Perry versus Schwarzenegger, seeking to eventually persuade the Supreme Court to overturn marriage bans. And so we're going to talk about this next half hour of our program and welcome your phone calls. Our guest is Professor Jesse Choper. He is Earl Warren Professor of Public Law at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. We also have an email address you can use, but here is our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Professor Choper, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm glad to do it.
So this case is huge, isn't it? It will have ramifications for people all over the country and will go to the Supreme Court because no matter what the outcome, it will be appealed?
Well, I would say the chances are very, very high. You never know what people are going to do. In a way, the gay rights movement, all right, has been very, very careful not to get a case into the federal system and up to the United States Supreme Court. They've opposed it. They're afraid of losing. Mm. Not that it's a certainty that they'd lose, but they don't want to lose, and they, I mean, I'm just figuring what they're figuring, but I think their assumption is we've been doing pretty well state by state. Let's keep it out of what is probably, in their judgment at least, a conservative, more conservative Supreme Court. So I guess it's possible that if they win in the district court, all right, then they won't appeal, then the other side won't appeal. But I don't know. I think it'll go up, yes.
Yeah. So if they have been very careful about bringing this to court, why is this being brought to court?
Because it's being brought outside the mainstream of the gay rights movement, of the you know, formal organizations.
Mm-hmm.
These are just two people who you know, aren't in agreement with the gay rights movement in respect to keeping the federal constitutional question unresolved.
I see. And if it does decide in their favor, let's just play this out for a minute. I don't know what will happen, but should it go to the Supreme Court and Proposition 8 is deemed to be illegal, what does it mean for gay marriage in this country?
If the Supreme Court says that it is not unconstitutional.
Right.
Well, that's a ruling that says only that the federal constitution does not forbid a prohibition on gay marriage. It means that the states can do whatever they want. It will not, as a legal matter, it will not affect at all the situation, for example, in Massachusetts or in Iowa or the other states that have either voted or had their state Supreme Courts say that under the state constitution, gay marriage is unlawful, all right? Unconstitutional or unlawful. It won't affect that. All it says is the states can decide this the way they want. If they do decide that they want to bar gay marriage, then that's not unconstitutional. That would be the consequence of the Supreme Court finding in favor of the anti-gay marriage movement.
And ruling the other way?
Oh, if they rule it the other way, it's all over.
It's all over.
If they say a prohibition against gay marriage is unconstitutional, is a violation of either the Equal Protection, the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, then that means no government can prohibit a man and a man or a woman from getting married, from having from having the symbol and the title of being married and the legal consequences that flow therefrom.
Hmm. So it would be huge if they should rule that way. Do you think that the time is right here? We keep hearing about polls that show that younger people have different thoughts about gay marriage than older people in this country. Is the court fairly conservative, do you think, on this issue now? Or is the time ripe in terms of American public opinion thought on this to make that kind of ruling, saying that it is unconstitutional?
Well, I know some people would disagree with what I'm going to say, but I am really confident that public opinion polls do not affect how the Supreme Court justices vote. It is true that if they were to say we want to interpret the Constitution in light of evolving standards, they might point to that. Even if they do point to it, I want to say that I believe that the nine justices of the Supreme Court are going to vote it the way they see the Constitution ought to be read under these circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Having done so, they might cite polls to support their position.
Right.
But I don't think that that plays a big factor. I think that the significance of the growing number of people who've come to accept gay marriage in this country is one that the gay rights movement would say, look, We don't want to take this to the Supreme Court. Now, the legal effect of a Supreme Court ruling saying that it's okay to ban gay marriage, it would leave it to the states, just mm-hmm. as I said, right?
Right.
But it would have some psychological impact, as your question sort of indicated. If the Supreme Court says, well, it's okay, well, the notion is that doesn't help our movement at all. We prefer them to say nothing.
Right.
And not that it's okay, because here we have a progressive increase in those people who seem to be more supportive of gay marriage, and we don't want to do anything to turn that around.
Mm-hmm. Professor Trooper, can you talk more about the guarantees of equal protection and due process and how that part of the Constitution may have been used in other civil rights cases that may have some bearing on what's being decided now?
Okay. There have been two cases that involve gay rights, the constitutionality of on the issue of gay rights that have reached the Supreme Court. One was a fairly complicated situation, which arose from Colorado, which passed a constitutional amendment saying that an anti-discrimination law, which included gays as beneficiaries, all right, had to be passed by a constitutional vote, all right, and that is by the people, that neither the state legislature nor city councils or so forth could pass a law saying it shall be unlawful to discriminate against gays in respect to employment or in respect to other kinds of benefits.
Mm-hmm.
It was precipitated by two liberal communities. Boulder was one, I know, and Aspen, I think, was the other, that passed these local ordinances. And the anti-gay rights people sponsored this constitutional amendment. Well, to make a long story shorter, the Supreme Court, by a 6-3 vote, held that that was a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. It said that the discrimination against gays under those circumstances violated the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. Well, it was a special kind of case. They emphasized the fact that this imposed a very special kind of discrimination in which it raised the level of government as to which that you have to go to in order to get legislation in your favor. Everybody else can go to the legislature or can go to the city council. You've got to go to the people
mm-hmm.
to get something done for you. So that's not quite the same as gay marriage. The other case was a simpler case in a way. It was the Texas consensual adult sodomy case, in which Texas, as a number of states do, barred sodomy, homosexual sodomy, all right? And the court held that it was a violation of the right of privacy or due process. And one justice said we should have held that it violates equal protection. All right? That was Justice O'Connor. She's gone, so her opinion won't count for that much. But she joined the majority, or she joined the vote in holding that it was unconstitutional. That case is going to be relied on very strongly, that if you can't bar homosexual sexual relations, right?
Right.
You shouldn't be able to bar marriage either. That puts it, and both of those cases, both the Colorado case and the Texas case, put some real emphasis on the fact that the reason for these laws was animus toward gays. That's the formal word that's used, hostility. That these laws were not based on reasonable grounds. They weren't based on anything but dislike of the gays. And therefore, the legal term is they had no rational basis. If you think about if you can show that a law has no rational basis.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Then it can easily violate, or it readily violates equal protection or due process, depending about which one you use. And the gay rights people don't care which way they're going to win on this thing. They just like to win. So if you think about it for a moment, when the court said, look, this is the product of dislike, of animus, they're saying that's the opposite of rational. That's emotional. You're not doing this because there's a good reason for it. You're doing it because you don't like these people. That is irrational and a violation of the Constitution. And the gay right, the anti-gay rights side in this case, all right, the defendants,
right.
They're saying, no, there's a very rational purpose for this. It's preserving this long-term tradition of marriage between a man and a woman, and they say it has, you know, it affects families and child reproduction and so forth and so on. And that's, in many ways, the major issue in this case. Was this based on animus, or does it have some rational basis
to it?
If the defendants, those who are defending Proposition 8, can show or cannot defeat the argument that this is based on animus, that's what the plaintiffs are going to be arguing, the challengers, then they're in bad shape.
And the plaintiffs, at least in one of the couples, that couple has four children, for heaven's sake. They pick sort of the perfect couple to do this case, don't you think?
That's certainly going to be the answer. Well, yeah, I don't think they chose them for that reason. I mean, they may have. I don't know the strategy of it. But I think that these were people who wanted to go to take this big
right.
issue and put it on its way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, let's welcome phone calls for you. Here's our number if you'd like to join the conversation. Our guest is Professor Jesse Choper. He is at UC Berkeley. He is the Earl Warren Professor of Public Law. He's also taught, all over the place, university at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. He's been a visiting professor at Harvard, Fordham Law School, the University of Milan, Free University in Amsterdam, and other places all over the world. We're talking about Proposition 8, the voter-approved constitutional amendment denying same-sex couples the right to marry. It's in a federal court this week, and we're talking about the ramifications, and they could be huge depending on which way this case goes. What do you think? Our number, join us, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're welcoming your phone calls. Rhonda's taking calls right now. She'll get you on hold, and we'll be with you on the air momentarily. 800-486-8655. Is somebody, or have there been court cases looking at how Proposition 8 passed here? This whole idea, we were talking to a guest the first half hour of the show who wants to ban divorce in California, and It was an interesting half hour, but he kept talking about the tyranny of the majority here and had some real problems with the ballot initiative. Will that be a part of this case at all, Professor Chopra?
No. That is, at least to my knowledge, there's no challenge to the... There already was a challenge, by the way, in the California courts, saying that this proposition was not properly enacted, all right? And the California courts held that it was under California law. They did so despite the fact that it overturned their earlier decision saying that the California Constitution barred the prohibition on gay marriage. So, I mean, the tyranny of the majority notion is that it's saying that the majority is denying a minority an important right.
Right.
And the issue under the federal Constitution now is whether this right is sufficiently important to be considered one that is entitled to special constitutional protections, sort of on a par with abortion and on the par of the right of, for example, parents to educate their children. Those are rights. Those are liberties, if you will, that have been said to be entitled to special constitutional protection. And that's what they're trying to do. And the court has said so for the right to marry.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the arguments they're also going to put. There have been cases, several, which have said the right to marry is a fundamental constitutional right. And a direct prohibition on it, which this is. This is not saying, well, it's going to cost you more to get married or something like that. It's saying you can't.
Right.
If the court, I think that's one of the strong arguments that can be made against it.
Let's go to Russell. Whoa, Russell, where are you? Russell from Madison?
Sorry.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. I'm enjoying this discussion immensely. I'm a Bible teacher, and I have similar discussions with my students over some of these issues. I'm also a libertarian. I'm very much for individual rights and civil liberties. I believe that anybody should be able to worship God or not worship God how they choose, to believe how they believe. I don't think that marriage should be driven by the state and that sort of thing. Anyways, but in the position that we're in right now, if it were to go to, like, the Supreme Court, and they made a decision that, yes, it is a constitutional right for gays to be married as well, how would that affect the idea of discrimination with ministers? Would ministers have to marry marry gay individuals?
The answer to that is no. If the court were to hold that marriage is a fundamental right or discrimination against gays in respect to marriage is unconstitutional, all that means is that the state could not bar them from getting married. It wouldn't force anybody. It would force a government official. Government official couldn't sue. Who performs marriages, a justice of the peace, whatever you have in Wisconsin, or judge. A judge couldn't say, no, I won't marry you because you're not a man and a woman. They are barred. But private persons who are authorized by the state to marry, I would not be affected by this, I'm quite confident.
We go to Ken from Delavan next. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I'm just amazed in all of the debates that have been going on and all of the question of, like you're saying, the majority rules. Why isn't anybody discussing, you know, the fundamental rights that were given Americans in the Constitution, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness? I mean, it's if gay marriage was the norm, and straight couples wanted to get married, and there was a huge debate about it, it would fall under that, wouldn't it? I mean, it's not a matter of what the majority thinks, because the framework of the Constitution guarantees these rights to every American across the country.
Yeah. Look, the difficulty with that is the language you correctly cite, the language of the Constitution. The 14th Amendment says no state shall deprive anyone of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. All right, and that doesn't mean that you can't interfere with anyone's life, liberty, or property. If you think about it, every law restricts either life, liberty, or property. If you're told that you can't exceed a speed limit of 65 miles an hour, that certainly interferes with your liberty. If you're told that you can't engage in, you cannot engage in price fixing, that restricts your liberty. So as a consequence of that, the Supreme Court has said, now, obviously they didn't mean that you can't have any government at all to tell people that they cannot do certain kinds of things. That's what government is basically all about. So they've said, so we're going to separate two kinds of liberty. One is fundamental rights. They cannot be restricted unless you've got really strong purposes. The rest can be restricted so long as there's some rational basis for it. Now, they're going to argue here that there's no rational basis for it, even, because this is not done for reasons. It's done for hatred, animus, or dislike. They're also going to argue that the court has held that marriage is a fundamental right, and consequently, the state's got to have an overriding. The formal phrase is that you have to show that you have a compelling government interest in preventing gay people from getting married, if it's a fundamental right, or at least a very substantial governmental interest, if it doesn't reach the, you know, if the court says it doesn't have to reach the highest level of protection. But the mere fact that it interferes with liberty is not going to invalidate the law.
Thanks so much for the call. What do you think of these two guys joining forces, Ted Olson and David Boies? And we saw so much of both of them in the
Bush against Gore.
Yeah, Bush versus Gore. And here they are together now on the same side. What does that mean?
Well, it's not surprising for Boies so much. Because he's generally considered to be, you know, a liberal. And he was the one who represented Gore
right.
in the Florida election contest. I guess the greater surprise is by Ted Olson, who is an extremely prominent conservative Republican lawyer. He represented President Bush. He was also Solicitor General of the United States. And he's generally considered associated with conservative causes. I think the answer to why he's there is because he has a man just before us has a strong libertarian emphasis to his conservatism. You know, it is not inconsistent with being a conservative. There are different kinds of conservatives. It's not inconsistent with identifying as a conservative if you're a libertarian. In many ways, they're the most conservative. They say, look, government can't do anything or very, very little anyway. You know, leave us alone. So I think at least on this issue, he has a libertarian approach to it. And I think he probably does on a number of others, too.
Right.
These are two very, very smart and accomplished lawyers. And it certainly gave a lot of force to what was being done, as well as a lot of publicity.
Oh, it sure has. It sure. And what's the latest with the publicity? There's been some development this morning. Has the Supreme Court said, "Yeah, you can go ahead now with YouTube"? Or
I haven't heard anything about that. I was, I did. It's early out here, you know. But I checked I checked my emails, and I didn't see, you know, a New York Times alert. So
right. No, I don't. As of 9 o'clock, at least, I didn't hear 10, but nothing had happened by 9. Well, it would be 2. Well, it'll be about the right time. At any rate, we don't know. Bill from Oshkosh. Hi. About a minute left,
Hi.
Bill.
Hi. Fabulous conversation. A factual point, comment I'd like to make. You solved the other question I had about, you know, the tyranny against the minority. At least I think you did. I was off the air from talking to somebody. But my question is the factual claim against gay marriage that will hurt the population. I think that's percentage of gays is very low, and I think the loss of reproduction, the amount of women that can bear, the population growth is determined by the number of women that bear children, not by the number of marriages there are, And in fact, there are an enormous number of children born out of wedlock, and citing the couple that you name, maybe that's of great service to the state if they take orphan children or abandoned children in for families. I mean, I think on demographic grounds, it makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, I certainly think that that is a point that the challengers are going to make in this case. So that I do know that the defendants are saying that this is, in some way, it's going to have a negative effect on reproduction and raising of children. And you've made one argument that, let me put it in a legal sense. They may say, look, having fewer children or having more children is not a compelling government interest. A lot of people think we got, overpopulation throughout the country and the world. And so it may be an interest. It's rational, but it's not compelling or it's not overriding. And as you point out, it doesn't make any difference anyway, whether they're married or not. They're going to have children or they're not going to have children.
Yeah, we have to break at this point. We're out of time. Professor Chopra, thank you. It was fascinating.
You're certainly welcome.
Professor Jesse Chopra, and he is Earl Warren Professor of Public Law at the University of California, Berkeley School of Law. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and to Rhonda as well for on-air production. A reminder, if you are involved in any kind of service work in Haiti, we do plan to do a program on Haiti tomorrow. Her email is fanning@wpr.org. We'd like to hear from you. Thanks for listening.